like to share a few thoughts this morning. I want to start out a little bit different this morning. I want to read a little bit of a testimony, share with you to start off the thought. This person is Catherine Marshall. But she had one period of her life where she had tuberculosis, and it put her in bed for, I think it was approximately 3 years. Anyway, this is some of her testimony concerning that time. On the morning of September 14th, I could think of nothing but a nugget of a story embedded in that pamphlet on healing. Her husband had given her this little tract. It was about a former missionary who had been bedridden for 8 years. During those long years, she had steadily and persistently asked God why. She could not understand why she should be laid on the shelf when she was doing the Lord's work. There was rebellion in her heart, and the drums of mutiny rolled every now and then. The burden of her prayers was that God should make her well in order that she might return to the mission field. But nothing happened. Finally, worn out with failure of these prayers and with a desperate sort of resignation within her, she prayed, "All right, Lord, I give in. If I am to be sick for the rest of my life, I bow to Thy will. I want Thee even more than I want health. It is for Thee to decide." Thus, leaving herself entirely in the hands, in God's hands, she began to feel a peace she had not known at no time during her illness. In 2 weeks, she was out of bed and completely well. Now, that was the missionary. That's not Catherine. She was thinking of this in this tract. The first part of this true story seems strikingly like my experience. Suddenly, an inner illumination playing on that missionary's experience revealed to me my mistakes in prayer. I had been demanding of God. I'd claimed health as my right. Furthermore, I had never for one moment stopped rebelling against tuberculosis or against the invalidism it had induced. I had not faced reality. The right way, then, must be the only way left, that of submission and surrender to the situation as it was. Privately, with tears eloquent of the reality of what I was doing, I lay in bed and prayed, "Lord, I have done everything I've known how to do, and it hasn't been good enough. I'm desperately weary of the struggle of trying to persuade You to give me what I want. I'm beaten, whipped, and through. If You want me to be an invalid for the rest of my life, all right, here I am, doing anything You like with me in my life." There was no trace of graciousness about the gift of my life and will. Nothing victorious, nothing expectant. I had no faith left as I understood faith. Nevertheless, a strange, deep peace settled into my heart. In the early hours of the next morning, something awakened me. The luminous hands of the clock on my nightstand said that it was 3 a.m. The room was in darkness, that total darkness known only to the country where there are no streetlights. My mind was active, chewing on this spiritual adventure of the day before. I, who had deliberately surrendered all hope of health, now discovered an active, newborn hope in my heart. Whence it had come, I did not know. Story after story from the New Testament narratives came to my mind. There was the one about the man born blind, the one about the man at the pool of Bethesda, who had been incapacitated for 38 years, the one about the man with the withered hand. I saw that all of these cases had one thing in common, In each instance, Jesus told the man seeking healing to do something. And as he obeyed, he was cured. Obedience was apparently the test of real faith. The man at the pool, who did not even think he could stand up, had to get up anyway and roll up his mat. And as he made the effort, he was cured. The one with the useless hand had to try to stretch it out, and as he did so, it became normal. The blind man was told to go and wash in a pool, and as he obeyed, his sight returned. Suppose I mused, I could talk to Jesus as those people did and ask him to cure me. I wonder what he would tell me to do. My imagination supplied dramatic possibilities. Jesus might tell me, for example, to appear downstairs for breakfast with the family the next morning. I could picture their surprise and mingled delight and alarm. Suddenly, with this new resolution, I almost sat up in bed. I had no sooner breathed the question, "Lord, what would you ask me to do?" when it happened. Past all credible belief, suddenly, unaccountably, Christ was there in person, standing by the right side of my bed. I could see nothing but that deep, velvety blackness, but the bedroom was filled with an intensity of power as if the dynamo of the universe was there. Every nerve in my body tingled with it as with a shock of electricity. I knew that Jesus was smiling at me, tenderly, lovingly, whimsically, a trifle amused at my too intense seriousness about myself. "Go," he said in direct reply to my question. "Go and tell your mother. That's easy enough, isn't it?" I faltered. What would mother think? It's the middle of the night. She would think I had suddenly gone crazy. Christ said nothing more. He had told me what to do. It was clear to me that I could take it or leave it, but that if I did not obey, the chance might be gone forever. In a flash, I understood the real freedom of choice God always allows His creatures. I also understood, on the other hand, why Thomas had knelt in adoration at this one's feet, crying, "My Lord and my God." There was supreme kingliness here, as well as a human personality more vivid, more compelling than that of anyone I'd ever met. It would be difficult not to obey him. "I'll do it if it kills me," I said, climbing out of bed, sensing, even as I did so, the ludicrousness of my own words. Somehow I knew that Christ's eyes flashed humor as he stood quietly aside to let me pass. I groped my way into the dark hall to the bedroom at the other end and spoke softly to Mother and Dad. Naturally, they were startled. Mother sat bolt right up in bed. "What? What on earth has happened?" "It's all right. Don't be alarmed," I reassured them. "I just want to tell you that I'll be all right now." "It seemed important to tell you tonight." "What has happened?" Dad repeated. "I'm sorry to have wakened you. I'll tell you all about it in the morning. I promise it's too long a story for tonight. Everything's all right." When I returned to the bedroom, that vivid presence was gone. I found myself more excited than I have ever been before or since, and more wide awake. It was not until the first streaks of dawn appeared in the eastern sky that I slept again. The next morning, that extraordinary experience was quite as vivid as it had been during the night hours. The question was whether Christ meant that I had been healed instantaneously or that recovery would come sometime in the future. I did not know. There was nothing to do but wait for the next x-rays. Meanwhile, I wrote to Peter, telling him as calmly and reservedly as possible of that almost unbelievable occurrence. I had certainly never made any claims to mysticism, yet I well knew that this was the type of Christian experience which many would tag mystical and promptly dismiss as only half credible. Why it should have happened to me, I had no idea. But I also knew that that I had experienced was real. Peter's reply was equally reserved, simply because he wrote, "I just don't know what to reply." Years later, I found that he had carefully preserved that particular letter of mine, putting it with his most cherished personal papers. As it turned out, the healing of my lungs came slowly, no doubt because my faith grew slowly. The next x-rays showed for the first time definite progress. Thereafter, there was steady, solid healing, never with the least retrogression, until finally the doctors pronounced me completely well. I want to read a little bit more of this. Bear with me, it's not too awfully long. During the time of convalescence, I learned that tuberculosis is a disease of lack, of deficiency, or malnutrition. Where real poverty is not involved, the malnutrition is often spiritual as well as physical. Physicians now recognize that certain temperaments and physiques have a proclivity for certain diseases. It is not by chance, I'm skipping a little bit here, it's not by chance that these victims of the disease were all individuals of a sensitive nature whose talents found. It's talking about tuberculosis, that there were a lot of people that were really talented that that disease affected. The type of person who seems most susceptible to tuberculosis is one in whom the link between the spirit and the flesh is very close. The Bible takes for granted the fact that man is a threefold being, spirit, mind, and body, and that the health of each has a bearing on all. If in a tuberculous patient, the basic spiritual deficiency, which is frequently present, is recognized and treated along with the physical deficiencies, the disease usually rapidly retreats. In my own case, the real cause of my illness was a bad case of spiritual malnutrition. I had not known that my soul was all but starved to death, but it was. This might be a revelation to many laymen who believe that attending church once a week is quite enough spiritual exercise for anyone. In this instance, neither parental example nor a lifetime of church work, nor even listening Sunday by Sunday to Dr. Marshall's inspired preaching had given me the necessary spiritual nourishment, because I had not done my part during the week. Then, when circumstances denied me even that Sunday service, I discovered the necessity of a day-by-day effort for myself. It was a hard lesson to learn, but an invaluable one. Another step toward health was a sharp facing up of my situation. Jesus is supremely a realist, and he would have us be realists too. He led me to imagine the hated disease set out before me. I had to take a good long look at it, walk all around it, call it by name, and take the attitude, "So you have tuberculosis. Is that so awful? There is nothing here that God cannot deal with." This changed my inner attitude from one of cringing fear to a healthy normality. And as the fear of the disease diminished, it lost its hold on my body. I believe this morning. I'm coming to the conclusion that our spiritual man affects our physical man. That's what she called tuberculosis, malnutrition in the body, but when it's not a malnutrition, it can be a malnutrition of the spirit. I believe the spiritual affects our physical man. But what touched me in these two things is the surrender that these people found. They prayed, they prayed. The missionary was in bed for 8 years. That's a hard lesson. That's a long lesson. She was in bed 3 years. But they came to the place where they relinquished what they wanted, what they desired for their own life. And we struggle with that because we're human. We all have human desires. We have human makeups, human tendencies that I thought about the verse where it talked about the flesh lusteth against the spirit and the spirit against the flesh. They're contrary. And sometimes our flesh gets contrary to what God permits to come into our life. But I believe this morning. I believe that God only wants the best for us. He wants our spiritual benefit. He's trying to get us to heaven, I believe, more than what we realize and comprehend. And He knows what it takes to get us there. He knows what it takes to purge us, teach us, burn the dross out of our life. And these people, they found a place of surrender. And I've had similar circumstances. I've never been afflicted, as severely as what these people have been. But I know I've had to resign in times. I've had to resign, and this thought of peace and rest is so vital for us today. I believe God wants us to have that peace and that rest in our spirit. I believe He wants us to have it. He wants it to be there, but as long as we're fighting the battle in our strength, we're fighting within ourselves, and we're not really surrendering to God like He would like for us to, I believe it's going to hinder us. And I don't know where all the lines are on this. I tell you an experience. I know one of the experiences I had, and I've mentioned it before, but I got offended. I got hurt at one of the saints. They publicly stood up during service and said some things that really hurt. I struggled with that for, I don't know, probably a few weeks. And I didn't want to be around them. And I always knew where they were at. I had this built-in sonar system. I could spot them out of the corner of my eye. And I had them marked. I knew where they were at. And I avoided them. I didn't want to go near them. That was the flesh warring against my spirit. I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I prayed. Till one day, I remember I was in my study and I kneeled and I prayed. And I just gave it to God. And the Lord gave me a vision while I was praying. And He handed me this beautiful bouquet of roses that was beautiful. They were perfect. And I realized what it meant. The Lord allowed that thing to touch my life because He wanted to beautify me. He wanted to help me grow spiritually. When I embraced that, when I quit praying against it, and I embraced it, victory came. I was able to go and give them a handshake and a hug. I was able to meet them and look at them in the eye, not having anything absolved, not having any issues worked out, not having any apologies. The Lord gave me grace, and I loved that person. It was a struggle for a while. But there is a place of quiet rest, a place of peace, that I believe the devil tries to get us out of. He doesn't want us to enjoy the peace of God and the rest that we have. And that's what these people experience when they put it all in God's hands. They submitted it to God and they trusted God and they said, "Here it is, I'm tired." Have you ever been there? You pray, no change. You struggle. That thing just weighs on your mind, weighs on your heart. Until the Lord's mercy reminds us to come and surrender it and take our hands off of it. And we give it to Him. That's when God, His peace. You know, when the Lord's peace comes in, His rest, it doesn't matter what happens after that. It really doesn't matter what happens. Because God is there. God's presence is there. God's grace and power is there. And I believe the Lord can meet us in our darkest times. There's that one song that talks about Him sanctifying to thee thy deepest distress. God doesn't afflict the children of men willingly. He's not just trying to make life hard for us. There's a verse in Psalms I want to read. The book of Psalms, the 66th chapter. You know, sometimes we want answers, don't we? But we don't always get them. At least like the way we'd like. God, why'd you do this? Why'd you allow that to happen? If I was God, I wouldn't have done it that way. That's rebellion in our hearts, isn't it? Psalm 66 in verse 8, verse 7 says, "He ruleth by His power forever. His eyes behold the nations. Let not the rebellious exalt themselves." Salah. "O bless our God, ye people, and make the voice of His praise to be heard, which holdeth our soul in life, and suffereth not our feet to be moved. For Thou, O God, hast proved us. Thou hast tried us as silver is tried. Thou broughtest us into the net. Thou laidst affliction upon our loins. Thou hast caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but Thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. I will go into Thy house with burnt offerings. I will pay Thee my vows, which my lips have uttered and my mouth has spoken when I was in trouble." You know, the Lord allows these things to touch our lives. And I'm thankful that He does. I'm thankful that He does. Because He knows what He's doing. He knows how to get us to heaven. He knows how to... I believe also from reading this testimony too, she said she couldn't at first even say the word tuberculosis. She was so afraid of it. She knew what that word meant. But she said the Lord made her look at it and walk around it and examine it to face the reality of it. You know, sometimes the things that we fear, the Lord allows us to face those things, doesn't He? The things that we might be afraid of, He allows us to see and experience. And she said her faith was gone. She said she didn't have any faith. But I want to, when I started pondering that and thinking about that, she gave and consecrated her life in the midst, in the face of her situation. I think that's faith. To continue to surrender to God in a time of trouble and time of difficulty, and not just throw up your hands and walk away, but you're putting your hand in God's hand. And that's where we want our hands to be today. We want to put our hand in God's hand and allow Him to help walk us through the things in life. 2 Corinthians, we had the familiar scripture, Paul was praying verse 7, 2 Corinthians 12 and 7, it said, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And He said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for My strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities and reproaches and necessities and persecutions, distresses, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then am I strong." You know, the Lord seems to be in a lot of things that we don't see that He's in. Paul doesn't say what his thorn in the flesh was. Maybe it was his poor eyesight, his blindness. Maybe it was, doesn't really say exactly what altogether it was. To me, blindness would be a very difficult. I'll tell you something about blindness, though. Sister Dorley Beasley, you remember her? Was she diabetic? She lost her eyesight towards the end of her life. I've seen this same principle work in Sister Dorlela. You'd go to testimony. She was in the old Guthrie congregation, the old chapel. You would feel God in her testimony. She lost her visual eyesight, but God was so revealing Himself to her. He didn't heal her. He never healed her He didn't heal her. She died. And I don't know how long she had that blindness, but she had to be led around. But I remember wanting to get to prayer meeting so bad just to hear what she had to say. You just felt God in her words. You felt the Lord just radiate Himself from her life. But I believe the same thing. She took her hands off. She said, "Lord, You just have Your will and Your way with me." You know, there's a verse that says, Shall the vessel say to Him that formed it, "Why hast Thou made me thus?" We can kind of have an inward argument with the Lord about why He allowed this, why He allowed me to go through that, why He allowed this to happen. But I believe real spiritual growth, real victory comes when we submit our case into God's hands without any inner rebellion. And we come to the place where we're willing to listen and to obey, just like she did. The Lord told her, said, "Go tell your mom, 3 o'clock in the morning." I would have felt reluctant too. I don't like to impose upon people. But she went and obeyed. She did what the Lord told her to do. I believe Brother Fred Pruitt, there's a testimony in his book. He was out holding meetings. He got sick. He came back home. He was laying on the bed praying and seeking the Lord, and the Lord spoke to him, said, "Go lay across that other bed." He went and laid across the other bed, and he was healed. The Lord healed him. You know, Joseph Gillenbeck had a message in Louisiana about those shock collars. You know those shock collars you put on dogs when they do something you don't like? They get zapped. The Lord's not that way with us. But He does want us to get to the place where we listen. We cease from all of our struggling. 'Tis no longer I, but He. We cease from us, and we just obey, tuning into His voice. "Lord, what do You want me to do?" You believe this morning? I believe it's true. I believe sometimes to find God, we're going to have to surrender ourselves, surrender our situation, face what it is that's there. And I believe God can pour in the grace into our hearts and life when we do that. But Paul found that. He said there was a purpose for that thorn in the flesh that he had. I don't think he knew that at first. That's why he was praying. "Lord, this thing seems to be hindering me." As if we really know what God is doing. "Lord, this thing is hindering me." Just like the lady was praying, "Lord, heal me so I can get back to the mission field." But there was a purpose. There was a purpose for this. And I believe it's that way that God allows things. He'll allow the hedge to be removed. He'll allow our lives to be touched. But there is always something good that can come out of it if we surrender ourselves to God during that time and give ourselves to Him and yield to Him. There is something good and beneficial that can come out of those. And Paul, I don't think after the Lord spoke to him about that and he realized what that thorn in the flesh, the Lord showed it to him, I don't think he was content. "Most gladly, therefore." That changed his whole mindset. It just changed his whole thoughts. The thing he was praying against, something he felt like that was holding him back and holding him down, when actually God was in it and it was furthering His cause. But He was praying. That's how our humanity is. We can look at things, the flesh lusts against spirit. We can look at things in our flesh and it's contrary. So anyway, these thoughts were an encouragement to me, and I hope and trust they'll be an encouragement to us, that in the midst of our life, our troubles, our difficulties, that we would find that place of peace, that place of rest in Christ, when we have ceased from our struggling and we're allowing the Lord to bear our load and our burden. And I believe He'll do that and help us. Appreciate your attention.